Accession number 23218, Reel 8.
Colonel Goodmanshaft, Reel 8. You were saying that the collaborators were trying to join the Royal Guards as a way of getting out of trouble.
Yeah.
How did you manage to discover them and weed them out?
That was fairly easy because, you know, that at that time, of course, they had the parade around the castle and on different places in Oslo. And there were lots of people coming to Oslo for the first time after when the peace came after the war. And there were, we had to wait only actually a couple of hours before the report from one saying that he was a Nazi and he was a Nazi. So we just went out and picked them up and handed them over to the police. So that was not a good escape for those who tried that. So even one of those who came and went into uniform for about, I think probably a day or two, could be two, he was also taken out by some informer, and he had done so much that he was shot.
Yeah. What sort of things had he done?
He been given given about news about resistance movement and things like that, and because of his information, other Norwegians had been shot, and that was a lot of that time. So I think that after a week we had taken everyone, all of them out. So. Then we started to build up the King's Guard, took over all the normal guards objects, the same as they have today, the castle and the castle out at Asker, and they also had the guard on the Defense Department and on the Akershus Festning. That was the more or less the thing.
How many of them did you have altogether? What was the strength
of the King's Guard?
Yes.
Was five companies and the headquarters.
Quite a substantial force.
Yeah. Oh yes, it was a battalion actually. Mm. Yeah. So they were all trained before the war, but I have to say that most of them are no parade soldiers. They had to be taught that.
They had to be taught the formal drills.
Yeah, of course, being that. So and after about 3/4 of a year in the guards, I got then duty free for the rest of that year, about 3-4 months. To prepare myself for exams at the college, because I left Norway before I had done my normal college education after military school. So I that summer of 1946, I had to sit for exams to be able to get on the War College, which was done in Oslo at that time.
But you'd been to the Krigsskolen in England, hadn't you?
No. I didn't go in London. I was taken up, the group going to London, but I wouldn't go in there because I wanted to be with the commandos, and if I'd done that, I would have not been able to follow the commandos. So I didn't get school in London, no.
So what point then did you cease to be in the British service, as it were, and come back into the Norwegian? Was it when you arrived in Oslo and reported to the headquarters?
Yeah, you mean what?
Well, you were in the commandos, weren't you?
Yes.
And that was under British administration.
Yeah.
What stage did you pass over to Norwegian control? Was that when you got
into
Oslo?
When we reported in Oslo, yes. But, you know, there were a lot of us, and more of all the officers in the number 5 Troop 10 Commando was very disappointed with the reception we got by our own staffs.
Why was that?
I think that you know, the Norwegian government and Norwegian military leaders in London, they refused most of the time to leave Norwegians to go into battle somewhere else instead of waiting up in Scotland. Remember, the Norwegian brigade in Scotland was started in June 40, and they stayed there till out 45, not getting out of that area in the whole, and not taking part in anything that happened. And as soon as they tried to organize then Judith was going to take part in the fighting somewhere, the Norwegian government managed to get stop it before it came so far that they got in. And That was the big difference that came was when the Norwegian Air Force started also in 1940. And they came home, and then the commander of the Norwegian Air Force was an admiral at that time, of course. They refused, they joined the Air Force, the Royal Air Force, RAF, and worked in a squadron together with RAF. And quite a few of the squadrons also were mixed squadrons. So the commander-in-chief in London, General Bakeman, when we had headquarters in Eastbourne, that's only half an hour from London, he never visited us. Before, when we got back, the King, Kong Håkon, wanted to give a dinner to all us and all the troops. Then he had to come down. That was the only time we saw him. So, no, that was a very bad thing. I don't know why, but...
What subject did you have to study then to go to the military college?
Had to take the normal civilian college exam. History, languages, mathematics, and all that through. And that was quite a hell of a job, I would tell you that.
How long did you have? You said you had 4 months,
I had, before I finished the exam, I had used 7 months. So, but I had to have that exam to get into Krigsskolen. And after Krigsskolen, I became company commander in the Norwegian Brigade in Germany.
What did you learn when you were in the Krigsskolen? What was on the syllabus?
The old syllabus from before the war.
Not changed at all?
I will tell you an example. On the military history, that will probably interest you. They were still doing the detailed studies of the battles from the First War, Verdun and all those other battles down there. Mm. Yeah. Detailed on that was the agenda for a lot of...
Who was doing the instruction?
In history was, at that time, Colonel, or Major, I think it was, Frisvold, who later became CNC Army. And they brought in quite a few of the old teachers too, who just continue as they did before the war. And that was outdated by one war and 20 years. So
how long did the course last?
1 year.
1 year.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you learned at the Krigsskolen which was useful?
As far as normal military interest or military areas, I thought I was much better than they could teach me down there. The only thing we hadn't had in our education as commandos was staff duties. That was, of course, absolutely out. We had no places in our training, and we even bother with staff duties, because there were other people doing that for us all the time.
You didn't need it.
We didn't need it. But when I got home, and after doing some training at home, I got home from Germany in 1948, and in 52, I was sent to Canada to staff college, and there I learned staff duties.
But not at Krigsskolen?
No.
So you went through the Krigsskolen. Were there any practical exercises in the training?
No.
No.
No, only theoretical.
Just theory?
Yeah, only theories.
When you went to Germany, what did you do there?
I was company commander.
Mm. And an infantry regiment?
Yeah, infantry. You know that we sent a brigade on duty. First we had 6 months education or training at home. Then the last 6 months they were serving in Germany. As a complete Norwegian brigade. And the first group that we stationed down, I was stationed down in Göttingen, in the middle of Germany. And then we belonged to the 5th Division, British 5th Division.
What did you actually have to do? What was the company doing when you joined them in Göttingen?
We were training in special then guard duties. And we were stationed exactly at the border between the Germans, also the East Germans on this side, and then on that side was the American zone, and we were in the corner in the British zone. So.
So you saw Russians and Germans and Americans and British.
Yeah.
What were relations like between the two Germans at that stage, the Eastern Zone and the
Western Zone? Oh, at that time there was no possibilities to get in contact there whatsoever. But there was, of course, in the beginning, this was also in 47, late summer 47. There was then at that time still a tremendous lot of refugees coming from the east over to there. And that, of course, was quite a problem for us as troops to look after. And
what did you have to do for them?
We have to collect them and bring them to the campings, to the assembly camps that they were taken care of either by the Americans and or the British.
Where were they from? Were they Germans or were
they? They were Germans, most of them were Germans, and some were undecided where they came from and who they were. And of course, it was especially the receivement organization for each type of people coming.
Did you have to guard these assembly camps?
No, we didn't do anything like that.
What other occupation duties did you have to carry out?
Guards along the border. That was more, and then keep it up the training. We were down there in the winter, so we had winter training down there. And one strange thing what happened, of course, when I was down there with my company, one of the platoons in my company was Laps.
How did they get on?
Exceptionally well. People thought that this was going to be a complete failure. But they were absolutely... The only trouble I had was that because of... this is also a good story. At that, when we were down there, were absolutely... we had not allowed to have any contact with the Germans whatsoever.
No fraternization.
No fraternization. And then after being down there for about a couple of weeks, probably a month, I had the first lab coming to my office and said... They called me as captain for company command. They called me skipper. And then they came up and said if they could have leave and go and visit their sister. They had a sister married under the Germany. And of course I said yes. And then this was not only one, but there was four or five coming in a row. And then I said when they asked one of them, how the hell could your sister marry the German? And then he looked at me quite innocently and said, we live so close to the road. Because, you know, from Narvik to Kirkenes, that's on the Russian border, there is a main road called E6.
Yes, that's the road that goes all the way from Oslo right up to the top.
Yes. The Germans had marked every building from Narvik to Kirkenes with big numbers on the wall. Those were close to this main road. And so when the Germans was moving a unit up to Kirkenes, they said, okay, you advance for the first time to this area, and you take house number 260 to 320. And so on, they divided the group and sent them up. And then, of course, this group of Germans came in and took hold of the house and lived all the places they couldn't stay. Because they had, of course, I suppose, they had done a list stating how many they could put on each house.
Billeting,
yeah. And then, of course, when you think of it, these people had never seen any other else than their family and the close relatives. And then came, for them, this world-trained persons as the Germans were. And I found later on it was no wonder that some of them got married. So... That was a strange thing. But my company won a prize as the best infantry company in number 5 division. So those labs, the people started to talk about them down in Germany because you could see that they had it. There were no parade soldiers though. They couldn't walk in the same...
They couldn't march.
No.
They must have been good at the winter warfare.
Of course. I can tell you that we had winter warfare up in the Harz Mountains. Mm. And we were fighting against the Danes, so we had quite a lot of advantages. And Then when I was sitting in my Jeep reading maps and I stopped, then took about 5 minutes, opened the door and I came. Skipper, what do you want, a cup of coffee? And I got even the grass to burn. How they made coffee, God knows. No, no. But they are very unreliable.
Unreliable?
Yeah, yeah.
In what way? Did they disappear?
You shouldn't believe them in what they say. No, no, no. Quite a lot of them. So that's that.
What sort of training were you doing in the Harz Mountains? Were you doing normal
training? Normal winter training.
In the phases of war?
Yeah.
All the phases?
No, there was no... That, of course, only interesting it was at the Harz at that time. It was exactly on the border between Germany and Russia, and East Germany and Russia. So we could see across, and one of the main roads was on each side of the demarcation line. So,
what impression did you get of the Russians while you were in that area?
We met them only on official meetings. They had one strange thing that happened down there. You know that the German Atomic Institute, the Max Planck Institute, lies in Göttingen. And there was General, Professor, world-known atomic professor.
Edward Teller?
No. Professor. Oh, I have his name. He was working together with a Dane who got, I don't think they got the Nobel Prize, but they developed the main thing for the atomic bomb. He was tried, kidnapped by the Russians in Göttingen. And that was my response. That area was my response. So I had to put, for the rest of the time I was down in Göttingen there, I had to have special guard on the Atomic Institute, Max Planck Institute, and the home of Professor Heisenberger?
Heisenberg.
Yeah.
Did he manage to get away?
No, he was living there as long as we were there. But we kept guard on him, also in his private house.
So the Russians didn't manage to get him?
No. They got him in his car, but the population stopped the car. It was crowded down in Göttingen, and they tried it. So that was... But I met the Russian also later. Because when I got home from Germany, I was not in agreement with the army command. So I joined the intelligence service.
Why were you in disagreement with the army command? What?
We were a group of officers from England and Scotland who wanted also our training program modernized. We had all done this for 4 or 5 years, and we put forward a lot of things, and then we organized also what was called Officersforbund. Which was considered of only officers who had been training in England. And we tried to get, we didn't agree with the people who got the jobs of building up the defenses again. A lot of our officers, the older ones, they went all over their free will into Germany was sitting there in the locked up for the rest of the war, and they sitting there in Germany, they divided all the top positions between them. So they got home. They had, of course, the connection with the top officers also at that time, and they got their jobs. And they didn't know nothing. They was just as blank as they were before the war came out. And I was one of them who was active against that. So I joined the intelligence service. And I served there for 4 years.
How did you go about joining the intelligence service? Did you just make an ordinary application?
No. I just sent word through that I was interesting, and then I was called in. Well, there I had one very interesting. I had many jobs to do, sort of bigger or late or smaller. But I had one very interesting job, and that was in 1994. Then Norway was going to join the NATO. We joined the NATO in 1949. And our big interest was that time Finland. Because in the Russian-Finnish peace treaty, paragraph 4 say that if Russia feels that Finland is coming under interesting divide interesting of importance with the Western groups or any group with connection with Germany, they can undertake what they call protective occupation of northern Finland. So I was degraded to a student in geology, and I went to Rovaniemi up in the north in mid Finland, the biggest northern town, not very big. It's there where Santa Claus now is living.
Was he there when you arrived?
No, no.
You haven't moved in yet.
No. So I had a connection in Finland, what was called, he was a famous 400 meter runner in Finland. We knew all his name. I never seen him 400. He and me, we started off there to, first of all, our job was to reconnaissance all the roads and the situation on the roads. But we, of course, were there to check in any difficulties what was happening, Russian trying to move something. Were they going to? Is there a change coming on when this was officially that Norway has joined the NATO? And the Russian military staff lived in. There was only one hotel in Rovaniemi, and that was Pojanovi. And we moved into the same hotel. And each evening, of course, when we had time, we were sitting down in the bar with the Russians, and they were very interesting in our geological study.
Did they have any idea of who you were?
I can tell you that later on. And I stayed over there, and we looked after this, I think it was two months probably.
What sort of state were the roads like?
Only gravel roads, and you know that there was a lot of damage on the road because of the heavy military traffic,
yeah,
which had been there. And of course the Finns at that time had not enough means to repair it. But you know, up in northern Finland, everything is absolutely flat. And of course, flat land and wood covered. You drive through woods, all the places, apart from you come to a little opening, there is some living, and then there's woods again, till you come to an opening and some living.
What sort of woods were they? Were they birch woods?
Birch woods. No. What you call Christmas trees.
Yes. Evergreen.
That was the main mode, yeah. So I stayed in the intelligence service for 4 years.
I mean, do you think it would have been possible for the Russians to have moved a large body of troops through that area, through Rovaniemi, up towards the Norwegian frontier?
In that time, yes.
They could have done.
Yeah, because we were not organized enough here. Mm. And the NATO was, of course, not.
No, but I'm thinking more about the terrain and the...
there was nothing stopping them.
Nothing to stop them?
No. At that time, no.
What about the Finnish army? Did you see anything in the Finn?
No, the Finnish army, they, of course, if they had moved against it, they would have postponed it, of course, stopped it for a while, but they couldn't. They were so beaten by themselves at that time that, the Finns joined the Germans in the land of the war, so they... Of course they had units and they also had equipment, but it's difficult to say what would have happened. So,
how did you get on with the Finns? Were you on good terms with them?
Yeah, if you understand what they're saying. It's not so many of them, better not in later years, but who speak Swedish. But Finnish, of course, no chance whatsoever. Estland is the only land. Name, we understand them. And Hungary. Also they understand Finnish, or it's the same language group. Yeah. So after being my turn
were there any other things in which you were interested at that time? You described the possibility of an external threat developing through northern Finland. Was there ever any concern that there might be communist subversion going on inside Norway?
Of course, but that is not another type of organization who looks after that. That's the the special police forces for that.
So it's not you were, so were you then exclusively military intelligence?
Yeah, clean military intelligence. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, what was happening at that time was that at that time they started off the big American intelligence building or organization in Norway. They had this station all over the places, in Bodø, in Vardø, and all those places. You can cover, they can more or less cover. I remember during an exercise in North Norway, we were sitting in the commando bunkers in Bodø, and we could see the Russian planes leaving their airfields in Murmansk.
Was this because of long-range radar?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So that... So that was building up all those years. So at that time, I think from the end of the war till about in the middle of the 60s, Norway was the biggest intelligence area you had in the whole NATO. So you know exactly what was going on all the places. We have still quite a lot of it, also still working today. So
never does any harm to be well informed.
Of course, yeah.
So you were in the intelligence service for, did you say, 4 years?
4 years, yeah.
Why did you leave it then and go back into the mainstream army? What?
They wanted to give me then the staff college education. So I was, end of 1952, I was sent to Canada and did 1 year there in Canadian Army Staff College in Kingston in Canada. And when I got back from Canada, I was appointed chief of staff of a new brigade up in Narvik, which was organized then in 53, 54, and stayed there for nearly 3 years. Yeah. And
what did you learn at the Canadian Staff College? What was the syllabus?
Staff duties. Yeah. Of course, that was. I had been a fighting man all the time. And now that was the first time I was on the theoretical side of staff duties.
You're going to become a paper warrior.
Yeah, I started on the paper war that time, yeah. Yes. And of course, then the first thing we had this the first year I was up there, we went through the biggest military exercise organized and driven and by the Norwegians alone up in North Norway. That was called Blåtind, and it was five complete brigades taking part. And we did all this planning with the colonels of the regimental commanders up there. There were those who had appointed themselves to the job in Germany. They didn't know the bits or pieces of staff duties. But they all had young, newly educated majors who were as chief of staffs. And so we run this exercise. I would say that that's one of the biggest or most... good exercises we have had in Norway, or big exercises for a long time. After that, of course, NATO took over this big deals.
What was the practice for? Was it defending against the Soviet invasion?
All the time, everything it was defense against Soviet invasion.
Did you go through all the phases of war on this big exercise?
Yeah.
Did you have anyone playing the part of enemy?
We normally appointed the troops who normally lives and stood in Finnmark. They were enemies coming over in the right
did
area.
Did this happen in Blåtind in this exercise?
The Blåtind exercise, that was the same setup actually.
Mm.
And the exercise lasted for a week and a half in the end of August 1944. Yeah. So, 54 of course. Yeah.
And you're saying that the brigade commanders didn't know what they were doing.
They had no, they had been regimental commanders in Norway before the war.
Mm.
And they had no education after that at all. Otherwise they probably read any magazine or so on. That could be the thing, but otherwise no. So
did you have the Northern Brigade playing the part of the Russians?
Yeah.
When they were doing that, did they attempt to operate according to Russian tactics, or did they use Norwegian tactics?
They tried at least to use Russian tactics. Yeah, they tried that. To